Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, your host, and as always, I'm really glad you have tuned in. Just 7 days left before the 2022 midterm elections, and if you turn on the TV or listen to commercial radio, you know how hot our politics are right now. As the temperature has raised on those politics, it has reflected itself, I think, in the ads that we see and hear. Part of that is because so much is at stake, at least in people's minds, during these elections. If one side wins, the other side thinks it's a huge, huge loss. And so ads for both parties have increasingly painted the other side as extreme or crazy or really out of touch with, quote, mainstream citizens. And again, we see so much of this these days, and it certainly seems like more than in days past, the tone of these ads is really over the top. People make really outlandish claims about their opponents. People say awful things about their opponents, whether they are true or, in some cases, just not true at all. And increasingly, what we see are people not talking about why they or their favorite candidate should win on election day. Everyone wants to talk about how bad the other person is. The negative ads are really, really over the top right now. But my instincts could be wrong, I guess. Maybe this is always the way it has been. Maybe since the beginning of the Republic, when we had ads in newspapers and leaflets, this has just been what our politics are about. And maybe it's just the platforms that we have now, television, internet, 24-hour cable news, that makes it possible for all of this to seem more over the top than it was before. But one thing's clear for all of us. We will just be swimming in this stuff for the next 7 days, and we have been swimming in it, especially here in Michigan, for several months now. That's where we want to start the discussion today. What are the values of these political ads? Why are there so many of them? Why are so many of them so negative? And how should we be accounting for them in the decision-making that we're doing in the run-up to an election? Michael Franz is a professor of government and legal studies at Bowdoin College who studies political ads. We have invited him here onto the program to talk about how political ads have changed over time in this country, whether they are getting more extreme or aggressive in their rhetoric, and if they are less accurate than they have been in the past. Professor Franz, welcome to Detroit Today.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So let's start here. As I said in the open, you can't turn on the TV right now or listen to commercial radio without hearing or seeing these ads. And they are overwhelmingly, at least here in Michigan, I think it's fair to say, they are overwhelmingly negative ads. I don't see a lot of ads from candidates saying, hey, here's what I'll do if I'm elected. Here's why you should support me. Here's why my ideas are really great. These are ads run primarily by third parties, third-party interests, tearing down one candidate or another, or telling you not to vote in favor of a referendum. So is it me, or is this different than what we have seen both in the recent past and in our entire political history? Is this combativeness, this aggressiveness, getting worse in political ads?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it is the case that we're seeing negative advertising at a higher rate than we've seen in previous cycles. In your intro, you alluded to the notion that it's possible that our politics have always been somewhat negative, and that is true. If you go all the way back to the beginning of the Republic, there was a lot of pretty aggressive attacks on early political leaders in the new Republic. And so there's always been this feature of democratic politics in the United States. But in the United States, in recent cycles, we've also seen polarization really take root and divide the two parties apart. And this creates, as you noted, incredibly important stakes for both sides in the outcome of close elections. And it leads to a lot of then attacks on the opposition. The other thing that's really important is the rise of these outside groups, which are very aggressive in congressional and gubernatorial and other competitive races. And they don't really do, as you note, any positive advertising. They spend almost all of their money tearing down candidates. And so as these groups have become more involved in elections, they have contributed to an increasing levels of negativity.
Mm. And let's back up a little and talk about these third party interests and the money that they are able to raise and the way they are allowed to spend it. That has changed for sure in recent years as a result of the Supreme Court's ruling in Citizens United. We really are looking at a very different playing field in elections anymore. It's not just the two candidates or the for or against side of an issue. You have entire cottage industries of third-party interests that raise huge volumes of money and spend that money on these races, and it's essentially like they're another player on the field. Sometimes they're spending more than the candidates themselves.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And the other thing about this that's very interesting in terms of following these patterns is that many of these groups are not transparent about their funding. And they end up sounding like really potentially pro-citizen or, you know, good government groups or groups advocating for common sense. But they're also front organizations for other national interests, for unions or for pro-business interests. And in some cases, even the biggest outside groups are really just the political parties spending money through these outside organizations, not directly the political parties, but essentially party leaders form these super PACs, raise money outside of the fundraising limits at the federal level, and spend unlimited amounts in these close races. And so when you oftentimes see an ad from a group like Senate Leadership Fund or House Majority PAC, I mean, they should be understood really as ads from Republican and Democratic Party interests, but they're shrouded in these front organizations, and so it's a little bit difficult in competitive races for voters to really sort through who these groups are because there are so many of them, and in some congressional and statewide races, you might see 6 to 10 different advertising sponsors, which is hugely different from what we saw just 10 or 15 years ago when it would be the candidates and maybe the party committees, but then they would obviously say in the tagline that the ad was sponsored by the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. And so at least voters knew a little bit about the underlying interests or goals of those ad sponsors.
Yeah, yeah. And let's talk about the way in which these third parties are playing an overly negative role in these campaigns. I don't see third-party ads for candidates, at least not here in Michigan this cycle. What I see are ads that say, the other side is dangerous or crazy or, I mean, really over-the-top language trying to tear down candidates, not build them up.
That's right. And I think what these groups think they can do is that they can provide. I think the sort of logic behind it is that they can provide some cover for candidates to, you know, if candidates want to air positive ads, you know, when they do, and they sometimes want to do that in order to tell their story or to at least sort of say that they're airing positive ads, that they can do that knowing that the outside supportive outside groups will go on the attack against the opponent. So it gives them a little bit of freedom to be positive or to maybe do some contrast ads. Now, of course, candidates still love to do negative advertising, and they do a lot of that. But I think the group's logic generally is, well, we'll do this. We'll say the worst, you know, we'll say the most incendiary things possible. We'll raise the doubts, you know, in all corners. And then candidates, you know, they have a little bit of freedom to take the high road a little bit, and then can, you know, they certainly can then claim, the candidates, as they often do, that, well, I have nothing to do with these groups. I don't control them. They're beyond my, you know, reach of influence. And so they get a little bit of protection from the most vitriolic attacks that these groups sponsor.
Yeah. I want to, of course, play some ads during the conversation here, because I think in some cases you can't believe it unless you actually hear it, because they really are pretty over the top this year. I want to start with one from a group called Michigan Families United, and this is about our governor, Gretchen Whitmer, supposedly in favor of Tudor Dixon, who is her opponent. But let's take a listen to it.
Under Gretchen Whitmer, the radicals want a drag queen in every classroom, indoctrinating our children.
Gretchen Whitmer stands with radical activists pushing sex and gender theory. Our schools need to get back to basics, teach kids how to read, write, and do math.
Gretchen Whitmer stands with a radical activist pushing sex and gender theory on kids.
I think boys and girls are different. It's not just science, it's common sense.
Tudor Dixon, protecting Michigan families.
Yeah, so Tudor Dixon protecting Michigan families, but you didn't say anything about, I guess, how she might protect Michigan families so much
right.
as they just took after the governor. Just to be fair here, I don't want to paint it as though only conservative groups are doing this to liberal politicians. I want to play another ad about Michigan Secretary of State Republican candidate Christina Caramo. This is paid for by iVote, IEMI PAC. It is not authorized by any candidate, but it is about the Secretary of State's race.
In politics, there are Democrats, independents, Republicans, and then there's Christina Caramo, candidate for Secretary of State. Caramo has called abortion satanic and child sacrifice. She's warned of demonic possession from sex, spoke at a QAnon conspiracy event, and court documents allege that Caramo tried to intentionally crash a car with her whole family inside. Regardless of party, Caramo is dangerously unfit for office.
Dangerously unfit for office, and the cuckoo clock running in the background is the thing that I think stands out the most in that ad. And both of these ads, of course, again, are from third parties, and they are very simple in their construct. The idea is, if you vote for this person, you are embracing somebody who is dangerous, not just somebody who you might not favor, but somebody who is a threat to public safety, to education, to all these things. That is not new in politics, again, but the tone and the frequency of this, these being the ads that we see all the time, that is new.
Yes, I think that this, because the stakes for both sides are so high, and they truly believe that. I mean, I think the entrepreneurs behind these groups, the candidates and the party leaders on both sides, are truly terrified of what will happen if the other side controls the sort of levers of power, and so that polarization that's happened among our leaders has resulted in serious beliefs on both sides that they need to do whatever it takes to prevent that other side from taking office. And, and I'm talking here about through the electoral process. I mean, there's a whole other conversation we can have about, election deniers and January 6th. But, I mean, in terms of airing ads, the way in which you're seeing these very sharp attacks on these candidates is reflective, I think, of a serious concern by these sponsors that it's just not good for America if either side, the other side wins. It's hard to measure this over time because, what it means to be aggressive or unfair can be different in different moments.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's fair to say that, the kinds of attacks we're seeing in these ads have reached a new level of aggressiveness that that we didn't previously see. Even 10 years ago, maybe 20 years ago for sure. And so it would take some work to really dig into the sort of language behind these. But the examples you played reflect the kind of culture war politics that are out there today and the way in which both sides have really, really fear what will happen if the other party wins. And so I think that's one of the things that's driving this.
Yeah. I'm talking with Michael Franz. He's a professor of government and legal studies at Bowdoin College. He looks at political ads in our country, and that's what we're talking about, the political ads that we are seeing and hearing at every possible break on television and on commercial radio. 7 days to go until the midterm elections, and I imagine that it will only get worse before we actually vote on November 8th. The airways will be jammed with these things. The question is, what effect do these have on the process? What effect do they have on you as you're sitting and watching television or listening to the radio? What do you make of all the political ads that you see? Not just political ads paid for by candidates or someone who has sponsored a referendum, but by third-party interests who raise millions of dollars in order to get on the airwaves and, for the most part, attack one side or the other. Do you pay attention to these ads? Do you try to just screen it all out? And if you do take it all in, tell me what effect it has on your decision making. Have you ever been swayed to do one thing or another by a political ad? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and put comments there, or go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation that way. I want to read a couple of social media comments. But and then get to the phones. Tobias says, until Michigan overhauls its campaign finance laws, and hopefully the fallout from the Lee Chatfield debacle will help spur this overhaul, Michigan will be a cesspool of dark money, and the negative ads will get worse there. Tobias is referring to the former Speaker of the House, who finds himself embroiled of something with something of a scandal involving dark money. Brian on Twitter says, I thought it was more hardcore when I was a kid, actually. He points to a MoveOn.org anti-Bush ad. There, of course, is a history of negative ads as well. I want to go next to Ava in Berkeley. Ava, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. This is a really great topic because a part of me feels like people really emotionally have their political views and are not very swayed by ads. I want to make a comment and then definitely ask your guest to see, since you've done that research, how much people are actually swayed by certain ads. I feel like we're usually more swayed emotionally by things that are going to be taken away from us. So Democrats should run these ads and talk about candidates they want to take away rights to abortion or pro-choice and all these things. And even in the sample ads that you played, Whitmer never said any of those things, but Karamo did.
Mm-hmm.
So how Michelle Obama used to say, when they go low, we go high. And I honestly feel like Democrats play too nice sometimes, and the attack ads aren't going to stop. People are swayed by negative things and realizing, wow, these are things that are going to be taken away from you. That's not what you believe.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to put that out there when candidates like that will do that, And so I honestly think we should put out, like, you know, what these more conservative or Republican candidates think and what they're going to do. And if anyone's going to be swayed by that, for sure. But if not, then they probably had a really strong enough view. So I'll leave with that comment. And my question is really going to be, like, what is the recent research to show that these ads really change people? I feel like it just kind of makes people believe, like, yeah, that's what I believe.
Yeah. I think the confirmation bias that you're talking about, Ava, is a powerful part of all of this. And I want to, a little later, get to some of the points you're making about the substantive differences between not just the ads, but also the campaigns, when you're talking about candidates who have done things or plan to do things that would roll back people's, you know, civil rights or voting rights or things like that, versus people who are trying to expand it. The ads, in some cases, the negative ads, make it sound like these are choices between equals, because they both paint the candidates as quote dangerous. But first, I do want to get Michael Franz to answer your specific question about the effectiveness of these ads and whether they actually play much of a role in people's decisions.
Well, it's such a great set of comments, too, because it taps into, you know, some things we know about the psychological effects of information on people. And I'm talking here kind of generally. I mean, there's been research to suggest that absolutely people are more attentive and responsive to negative information versus positive information, because it activates a sort of surveillance system amongst the recipient of information. We are also more responsive to emotional information than we are to factual information. And we also know that in the world of politics, emotionally laden culture issues are more interesting to voters, and voters respond to those more aggressively than the sort of nuts and bolts of economic policy making. And so all of those things sort of add up to suggest that these ads would be very effective when they're vitriolic, when they're emotion laden, when they're negative, and when they go after culture war policy matters. But what's so interesting about the research on political advertising specifically is that the research suggests that ads don't have huge effects on voters. Now, part of this is because we come to all of this politics with our partisan thinking. So we're Democrats or Republicans, and most of us are Democrats or Republicans, at least, or lean in one direction or another. And that really roots us in terms of what we think about politics and candidates. And so even when we see these vitriolic, emotion-laden messages, which should, you know, all else equal, as information influence us, we can reject them if it comes from the other side. It does confirm our prior views if it comes from our own side, and we end up sort of not moving all that much. And so candidates, you know, they are spending all of this money because there might be, in a close race, 3, 4, 5, 6% of voters that might be truly thought of as swing voters. Maybe it's a little higher in some races, and in some races candidates aren't well known. And so then things can be a little bit more movable. But in really high-profile races where partisanship has taken hold, candidates are competing for a small share of the electorate who are truly swing voters. And so most of these ads don't impact the rest of us. And that's what's sort of interesting about this, all of this money and all of this advertising is we're pretty effective as consumers of these ads at blunting their impact by counter-arguing it or dismissing it or by just agreeing with it if we like the message. And we don't move all that much.
Yeah. Okay, we need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Michael Franz of Bowdoin College. We're also going to add another voice, familiar voice, to the conversation, Rick Pluta, who is the senior state correspondent for the Michigan Public Radio Network. He has covered Michigan politics for a really long time. He's going to join us to talk about his reaction to all the ads and all the negativity. And we will continue to hear from you on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number. You can go to Twitter and hashtag us, and we'll include you in the conversation that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. We are talking about all the political ads that are on the airwaves right now with just 7 days to go before the November 8th midterm elections. How many of those ads there are, but also the tone and absolute negativity that soaks these ads. Really nasty election cycle that we're in the middle of. We've got two guests with us now. Michael Franz is a professor of government and legal studies at Bowdoin College, and he studies political ads. Also with us is Rick Pluta. He is a senior state correspondent for the Michigan Public Radio Network. He has covered Michigan politics for a really long time. We're going to hear from him in a minute about his reaction to all of this. We also want to hear from you. How are you taking all of this in? Are you paying attention to all of these ads? Have you seen an ad this cycle here in Michigan that made you think differently or pause about the way you think about either an issue or a candidate? Or are you someone who's doing your best to screen all of this out? I will make an admission. I recently upgraded to YouTube Premium because that gets rid of the ads that you have to watch before you watch videos. And I do enough watching of videos on YouTube that I got tired of all the political ads. I'm willing to pay just a little bit to keep it away from me. Are you somebody who is doing the same thing, trying to avoid all of these political ads? Give us a sense of, how you make sense of all of this and what you think maybe we could do differently to make some of it go away or hew to a more reasonable line in many cases. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work you into the conversation. Rick Pluta, as I said, you have covered the Capitol for more than 30 years.
This is my LP year, 33.
That's right, your Jesus year.
Which only works for, oh my God. I preferred LP, but which only works for, I think, a certain segment of the population.
Right.
But I hear long playing records are coming back.
They are. There are lots of young people who have record players and buying albums like we did when we were young, Rick. Mm-hmm. So tell me about the ads this cycle, how you're taking them in. Somebody who has seen these ads for a long time, I think they are more negative and more outlandish in their claims than I can remember, but I'm really curious about your sense of that.
Well, negative and outlandish has also become really normal. So, it's sort of hard to sort them out. I mean, a wise person, once said that, if you're watching a political ad, just assume it's not true. But, as the professor very smartly pointed out, is that, the ads aren't really meant to persuade so much as to, assert and, give an idea as opposed to, deliver a set of facts. As a matter of fact, Stephen, you would remember this, that, not that long ago, news organizations used to do things that were called ad watches, mm-hmm. where we would go through and confirm what was factual and not factual in a campaign ad. And I remember sometimes in the 90s, I think, a campaign manager said, I mean, we know that you guys put all this work into it, but we just laugh at it because we know it doesn't really make a difference. And what he was saying was that, there are other venues for, candidates to give actual information, positive about themselves and negative about their adversaries than, what you're seeing in short campaign ads on TV and what you hear on the radio now on the internet.
Yeah. What about the truthfulness of the ads this time? I played two ads in the first segment, one claiming that Governor Gretchen Whitmer wants a Drag Queen in Every Classroom, a line that I'm still kind of scratching my head about. I'm not sure exactly what they mean by that. And then another that, you know, claims things about Christina Caramo, the Republican candidate for Secretary of State, that have to do with demonic possession and intentionally crashing a car with her whole family inside. I mean, are these claims beyond the pale in a way that they haven't been in the past as well?
Well, the one about Gretchen Whitmer is verifiably inaccurate, that Attorney General Dana Nessel, in an awkward response to a complaint that schools were letting drag queens in to, you know, work with kids, said, she was being facetious. She said, "I think this is great. You know, drag queens are fun. We should have a drag queen in every school." And I remember the first time I heard that, maybe you did too, I was like, "Ooh, we know that's going to be used against her." And it was. But what Republicans are doing now is trying to create sort of this halo argument that because Dana Nessel said it, then all Democrats must agree with it. And Gretchen Whitmer has never said a word that I'm aware of about drag queens in school, you know, for or against. Although both, you know, Dana Nessel and Gretchen Whitmer, you know, have complained that, you know, these efforts to target students in particular about things like gender identity are, you know, pretty cold and harsh. You know, in the case of the Christina Caramo claim, I mean, we're aware of it. It sounds like there was a messy split there, but a lot of the facts are still just not known.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael Franz, we've got a couple of questions about truthfulness and whether media outlets have to run ads that aren't true and what the responsibility is there to make sure that what you put on the air is not false or you know, in some cases, maybe even defamatory. Can you talk some about the current environment and what the responsibility for these media outlets looks like?
Right. Well, it's a great question. You know, candidates generally have some pretty wide latitude in what they can say and what broadcast stations are able to do in refusing to air or spot or put on the air ads from candidates. They certainly don't have to air an ad that is factually untrue, but it's very hard to refuse the space to candidates lest you appear to be picking one side or favoring one side. And so broadcast stations tend to be pretty open in terms of what they accept. It's also a business, and so they make a fair amount of money by sponsoring or allowing these ads to be purchased on their TV stations or radio stations. The other wrinkle is just that candidates and groups are fairly good at trying to walk that line over an absurd claim that can be verified by a fact checker or an ad watch as untrue, but also having enough in it to say, well, you know, if you think of the issue this way or that way, you know, we're certainly not inventing a quote from this candidate, as you just discussed in the example around drag queens. And so it's not untrue. I mean, this did come up. And so there's a way for sponsors to sort of kind of argue that their message is, you know, true if you think of it this way or that way. And so that gets into some really tricky territory for how TV stations and radio stations handle the content that comes at them and whether they have the capacity to fact check all those messages, reject certain ones outright, and then get into this sort of what would inevitably be another round of back and forth about the role of the media in American politics today.
Yeah.
And so it's a tough spot to be in for voters, surely, who end up seeing these ads and wonder, how did this get on the air? But it's very rare for an ad sponsor to simply invent something completely out of thin air. They're usually basing it in something, even if it's twisted beyond belief. but they can at least speak back to some sort of kernel at the beginning of the trail that gives them some cover.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Give us a call. Let us know how you're taking in all of these ads as we are just 7 days out from the midterm elections. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you that way. Let's go to Bob in Crystal Falls up in the UP. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Taking my call. Yeah, well, he just kind of touched on what my point is, and it is that media needs to have a code of ethics, and they need to put greed aside and profits aside and say, this is not something we're going to air.
So, Bob, I hear you, and I don't disagree from the standpoint of democracy, but I guess my question for you, Bob, is what would you draw as the line? How would you draw that line? So, I mean, we live in a country where we strongly believe that people are entitled to their opinions. They're entitled to air their opinions, and that we don't make a decision about what's airable or shareable based on the content itself, right? Where it's based on whether something is false or not. So, but it sounds like you want to draw a different kind of line, and I guess I'd love to hear you articulate how you think media companies should formulate that line. What is over the top for you, Bob, and unacceptable?
Well, there used to be a line between truth and lie. And it's not falsehood or a misspeak, it's a lie. And lies used to be bad things. And children were taught in school when I went to school that being a liar was a terrible thing. And if the media is not going to draw that line, then we might as well just give up.
Yeah. Okay, Bob, I appreciate the call and the sentiment. And I think there's a lot of people who probably feel exactly the way you do. Rick Pluta, talk about how we as media deal with these ads. Now, you and I are working in public media. It's really different in our shops. But we, of course, know lots of people who have to struggle with this in commercial enterprises. Is Bob right that we're just money grubbing here and not thinking?
Well, I mean, there are, you know, certain responsibilities in terms of just, I mean, there's no fairness doctrine anymore, but there is an expectation of some version of equal time. And if you're in a position of just refusing all the ads from one candidate or from, you know, one ad placement agency, for example, then you're creating a problem for yourself. And don't forget that, political speech in our jurisprudence is the most protected speech. You can't get away with anything, but you can get away with a lot more than what you would do in any other context. I'm just going to bring up a bit of history since we have a caller from the UP, but there was that famous instance of Teddy Roosevelt suing a newspaper in Ishpeming.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't based on an ad. It was based on an editorial where the editorial writer said that everybody knows that Teddy Roosevelt gets habitually drunk, and Roosevelt got wind of it and sued the editor in Marquette. And the editor, once Roosevelt testified, basically backed down and Teddy and said, like, nope, I was obviously wrong. And Teddy Roosevelt asked for only 6 cents in damages, which is what he said at the time was the price of a good newspaper.
That's right. No, that's a great line. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. Bob, again, thanks very much for the call. Thanks for listening up there in Crystal Falls. When we come back, we are going to hear from somebody who is in the middle of all of this, somebody who is actually running for office this fall and has had some struggles with negative campaign ads. We'll also continue to hear from the rest of you on the phones and on social. 313-577-1019 is the number. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for listening. We are talking about political ads today, 7 days before the midterm elections here in Michigan and all around the country. We've got two great guests with us. Michael Franz is professor of government and legal studies at Bowdoin College, and Rick Pluta is the senior state correspondent for the Michigan Public Radio Network. We want to hear from you about how you're taking in all the ads. Whether you think the ads are overly negative or more negative than they have been in the past, especially here in Michigan. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag us. Let's go to Caroline in Bloomfield Hills. Caroline, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Stephen Henderson. Oh, my gosh. I want to say first, I love your show, so I appreciate some time on it.
No, thank you.
Yeah. My name's Carolyn Noble. I'm currently running for school board in Bloomfield Hills School District, and it encompasses a lot of different areas. But my comment is just, you know, we're running a nonpartisan campaign, and the local Oakland County Republicans watched our forum with the League of Women Voters Forum. It's a debate that happens with the candidates who are running, and they took a few of our clips, me and three others, and ran an attack ad to all the local Republican individuals in our community. What's wrong with that is I have no chance to make a comment or respond to it, or, you know, it's a small nonpartisan campaign, so it makes it very difficult, and they broke the rules of the League of Women Voter Forum by taking just little snippets of what we said and make it into a, you know, scare tactic.
So Caroline, is this an outside group, a third party group? It's not the you're saying that the party in Oakland County has done this?
The Oakland County Republican Party took this, made this ad to kind of get their folks to vote against us. They weren't really supporting any candidates, but they were saying we were candidates that they didn't want to support, essentially.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And where is this ad running? Where are people seeing it?
Well, you know, I didn't hear about it until I went to a school board meeting. It's only on YouTube, but apparently it's being given out on Facebook to different families. They're sending it back and forth. So I have no way to respond to the misinformation that's in there, which is kind of distressing as a candidate, because I want everyone to know that I'm running to support every student.
Yeah.
I want everyone to feel comfortable.
Caroline, I appreciate the call, and that's a great story about, you know, the ways in which ads get made and used in these campaigns. I do want to say that if there is anyone from the Oakland County Republican Party who wants to come be part of the program and explain what Caroline is talking about, we absolutely would air that as well. But Michael, I want to get you to react to this before I ask Rick to talk some about it. But this is precisely the problem that some candidates have, which is that, I mean, look, a small race like that, a school board race, not a lot of money floating around. You can't defend yourself in some cases against bigger interests who can spend against you.
Well, you know, this is a great example of one of the other sort of derivative effects of outside groups, but also big money, because if this is coming from a local a party committee, you know, it's not an outside group in that traditional sense. But what's happening in so many local races now is that big money is looking around for local candidates, local races, and environments where it is cheaper to get involved and bring in some of these national issues or these culture war issues into the debate, and in a way that didn't feature into very local campaigns all that often. In fact, as I was listening, I was struck by an example of something in my hometown here, or at least across the way in the next town over up in I'm in Maine, is a state rep candidate has been complaining about an outside group coming in and attacking her position on abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these national issues are now making their way down into local politics as the issue has become more localized. But also the people who are doing the attacks are increasingly large groups looking around to pick off a state legislator here, a school board member there, playing a very long game of trying to move local politics, not just national politics, in a particular direction. So it's a very fascinating case, and it's an example of how candidates who are just people who want to make their communities better, Democrats and Republicans, are sometimes facing these headwinds from larger organizations who see their campaign as a part of a larger battleground. And so it does make us think about, well, what do we do in response to that? How do we give tools to candidates or resources to campaigns to get their message out, and how do we encourage a positive message, and all the kinds of things that we care more about, so that we don't see more and more candidates being overwhelmed by messages from larger organizations with a lot deeper pockets.
Yeah. So Rick, that was the part of this that I wanted you to talk about is, you know, the interest that the parties have in nationalizing even these small races, like for school board. This school issue is really hot in Michigan right now, and it goes hand in hand with the school library issue, which has been
school libraries. Don't forget the kitty litter caucus.
Right.
Which is the group that was claiming that that students were being encouraged to be furries or something like that.
Right.
That it was that schools are providing litter boxes for students who identify as furries, which is bunk. I mean, I don't want
it's not true.
Iota of fact to it. And I know that in Oakland County, State Senator Jim Runstead, who's a Republican, has been very active in recruiting school board candidates. So that might be where, you know, the earlier story from your caller was talking about.
Yeah, but this effort to inject that into these races is, you know, of course aimed at winning more seats. But we're seeing that in a way that we haven't seen in other cycles here in Michigan.
Well, school boards are technically nonpartisan, but, you know, as we've often said here, Stephen, you know, you cannot take the politics out of politics.
Right.
And so, you know, that they run very often as coalitions on tickets. We've seen that in Ann Arbor, where I live. And so, you know, there's naturally going to be a fusion between political parties and people running for political offices, whether they're explicitly identified as partisan or not. And look, school board races in this environment have just become white hot, that these are not sleepy races where someone wants to, you know, come and serve a few terms on their local school board, be part of the solution. It's just, they've just become raucous.
Yeah. We've got about a minute left. Michael Franz, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about maybe places that have approached this in a way that tamps down some of what we've been talking about this hour. Has anyone figured this out?
Well, I don't think anyone's figured it out, but I do think that there, there's rules we could put in place that exist in some states to require a bit more transparency and funding. Some states, like my state of Maine, has a clean elections program that gives cash resources to candidates in exchange for raising very small contributions. There's been debates about doing that at the national level, and you could imagine encouraging some strings to go with that in terms of, using those resources for positive messages only. There's lots of things that you could consider doing, but I do think more transparency and giving voters more tools to understand who's sponsoring these ads and messages is really, to me, a positive reform that would give citizens more to go on, and that's really important, I think.
Yeah. Okay, Michael Franz and Rick Pluta, it was great to have both of you here with us to discuss this issue. Thanks so much for joining us
on
Detroit Today.
Thanks so much.
Okay, that is going to do it for us today. We're going to come back tomorrow and have a little talk with Governor Gretchen Whitmer about her reelection bid. We'll also talk with Congressman Dan Kildee about why he thinks he, too, should be reelected into office. Also, a little note again that we have extended an invitation to Tudor Dixon, the Republican nominee for governor, to come on and discuss her campaign. We would love to hear from her before the November 8th election. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.